because I mean, ultimately, we can't be there for every single thing in their life and telling them, you need to do this, you shouldn't do that, you know, but helping them discover, you know, where was the turning point and what went wrong and what should I do next time.
Welcome to the We Collide podcast. We're a growing community of everyday chicks colliding with Jesus in our mess, our pain, our joy, and our stories. We value showing up as we truly are, so that's what you'll find here. Walls and masks being torn down so that we can allow Jesus to meet us where we truly are and hear about other women doing the same. We can't wait to collide with you.
Welcome to the We Collide podcast. I'm Willow Weston, the founder and director of Collide, and today I get to hang out with a superwoman, Jen Shaw. I really do mean that when I call her a superwoman. Jen Shaw and her husband, Jeff, currently parent eight children. I don't know if you heard that right, but I have two, so that's a whole load of kids, and they range in ages from 4 to 21. And Jen has the biggest heart and is a biological, adoptive, and foster mama. Jen also serves as a point person for foster and adopted families at the church her husband pastors, which is Cornwall Church in Bellingham, Washington. She's helped start and lead multiple replanted groups, walking alongside foster and adopted families, providing encouragement and support as they navigate the beautiful yet often messy task of standing in the gap for children from hard places. Her family's foster and adoption journey began just over 5 years ago, and she's still alive to tell about it. So I am telling you that this woman is real. She's fun. She's sass. She's smart. She's strong, and she's to be admired. So Jen Shaw, thank you for jumping on the We Collide podcast and hanging out with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to have a meaningful conversation around one of the Proverbs. And we, it just feels like we're so desperate for wisdom in our lives. And so that and a suntan this summer, I'm hoping we'll grab hold of. And we're spending week after week opening up the book of Proverbs and having wisdom sort of grab a hold of our lives and asking wise people to hop on and speak and share their wisdom. And I intentionally asked you because we talk a lot at Collide about how we're everyday chicks running into Jesus. And I think you would say you feel like you're an everyday chick. You just got done telling me how you often hide in the closet and eat chocolate while your kids are freaking out or whatever. And I really wanted to have you come on and help pull apart this proverb with me and look at it through the lens of parenting. And I'm hoping that as we talk about this proverb in relationship to children, we might grow as parents, but we also might grow as kids of God.
Definitely.
So Proverbs 26:11 is what you and I are going to hang out and talk about. And it says, as a dog returns, my favorite proverb, by the way, as a dog returns to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly. So Jen, why would a dog vomit something and then go back to it again?
It's disgusting, isn't it? you know, I think there's so many reasons. And first of all, I think it's just natural. It's what they know. And I know that mothers, when babies are little, will sometimes chew it up and spit it out for them. So it's been modeled for them sometimes.
I never did that for my kids. That's so gross. People do that.
But, no, dogs.
Oh, dogs. I thought you meant mom.
No, the mom dogs.
Okay, okay, got it.
So, you know, these dogs have had that done for them. They're like, hey, my mom does that. And then I think, you know, even they're always hungry. And, you know, I know that even if you have fresh food put out, sometimes they'll eat the fresh food and then go after the vomit. Like, hey, I left something in there. So yeah, super gross.
Yeah, it is really gross. As a people, why do we do that though? Why do we go back to the very thing we know doesn't work? It's almost like when a dog vomits, it's almost like its system is saying, like, this isn't good for me. I don't want this. You know, I need to get this out. But then they find themselves going back to it. Why do we as people, why do you think we do that?
I know, it's crazy, right? I think it's the same answer, though. I think that it's natural. I think it's familiar. I think that sometimes we think that this time it'll turn out different or taste good. Even though deep down we know it won't.
Right. We need to remind ourselves it never tastes good. It's vomit and we're not dogs. No. What are some of the stories you have on your kids that they wouldn't mind you sharing? I mean, I just love to hear as a mom of eight, like how often have you seen your kids go back to the very dumb thing they know they ought not to do?
I have a lot of kids, so probably daily, but, oh my goodness. Yeah, there's a lot of stories. One of my favorites is, with one of my little ones, and they said it was okay that I share. You know, little kids oftentimes, you know, lying and stealing are just a developmental stage. So don't go judging my family, but you know, this one in particular just was really struggling with, going to kindergarten and, seeing all these neat things. And the backpack was constantly full of, you know, little trinkets that they were either pocketing from school and bringing home or from home to take to school to give to who knows who. And one time we had the bus driver hand us a gift card. Like, I don't think you wanted them giving this to the friend on the bus. I'm like, no, that actually was money on there.
Like they took it from you were going to give it away?
Yeah, because, you know, gift cards.
What store?
I think it was movie tickets.
Okay. So it actually did apply to children. It wasn't like, here's a gift card to Home Goods.
Well, no, but, you know, it was supposed to be for a date night for me. And it was in the drawer. Or whatever, and you know, it just looked like a fun, you know, shiny colored thing that they could give their friend, you know, because they don't know what it is. They just look like something neat out of the junk drawer. And yeah, so it wasn't junk, it had money on it. So I promptly, you know, we kept trying all these different things and talking about it, and it just wasn't working. And so, you know, one day I bought a clear backpack. And
I know, I'm sorry, but that's hilarious.
Because it just all, you know, all the different things, it wasn't working. And so that day, you know, I came home with the clear backpack and gave it to said kiddo. And I was like, you know, I'm so excited. And, oh, I got a new backpack. Why is it clear? And I said, well, why do you think it's clear? He said, so I won't steal. And I said, exactly. And he was like, okay, you know, and even kind of grinned like, awesome, you know, and I think that it was a relief because he was trying super hard to not and just couldn't get a handle on it. And so it almost like took the temptation away. And he loved that backpack, loved it.
That's hilarious. I mean, I'm literally translating it into the adult world of like, get yourself a clear backpack, people. Like, get yourself something so you will just be transparent in everything you do. I mean, that's kind of why we have rules at our house. Like, there's no computers, no laptops, no phones in bedrooms. Mm-hmm. We're like, we just have like this transparent life of like what we do on the screen needs to be in places where everyone can see, just because there's so many dangers on what can happen when you go behind closed doors and just open your kid up to the world.
Absolutely. You know, the world wide temptation.
Web. Right. But that's a hilarious story. Why do you think our kids keep having to make the same mistakes over and over again?
Oh, wouldn't we all like to know? I wish there was a one-size-fits-all answer because then we maybe could help them.
Do you find yourself frustrated, though? Like, why can't they learn the first time? Like, they do something and, like, they steal, like your kiddo that stole, and he gets in trouble, whether that's grounded, loses phone, gets a spanking. I mean, everyone has their own discipline and their own consequences, but they don't get it often the first time. Do you find yourself frustrated by that?
Yeah, for sure. It's crazy making. And especially when you feel like you've tried everything.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that sometimes just going to trying to, you know, I just stop and pray and I'm like, God, give me wisdom. Like, what's the root here? Mm-hmm. Because it can be different. You know, sometimes, you know, with say stealing, it could be a need, right? They, in their mind, there's some need that is not being fulfilled. You know, sometimes it could be, you know, just trying to, the thrill of it maybe, and just trying to conquer something and be sneaky, you know, mm-hmm. it could be any different any different reason and any different thing. And I think it's ever changing too. So I think that sometimes, you know, when things aren't working, just getting to the heart of what's really going on.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, the real deal is way, way deeper. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
What's the root here? I love that question. It's almost like asking all of ourselves, or asking our kids when they repeat mistakes, but also asking ourselves, what am I looking to experience? Mm-hmm. Like, what am I looking to experience? Because if it is the thrill, or it is this sense of, you know, you have kids who I assume came to you and had some previous trauma before they came to you. So there must be some unfulfilled longings that they unconsciously don't even realize they have.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's one of the hardest things that I need to unpack frequently is, you know, what's just natural, developmental stages, things that all kids do. Mm-hmm. And I always say, like, you know, with some of my kiddos that struggle a little bit more, they're doing the same things that kids do, right? They're not out setting arson fires at 4 years old. Mm-hmm. They're doing the same stuff, right? Right.
Praise the Lord.
Right. But you know, if they're doing things that kids do. So it sounds like, oh, well, that's just kids stuff. And it's like, yes, it is. However, because of some of their early trauma, you know, it's far more intense, far more frequent. We're not learning the lessons. It's over and over and over. And so sometimes just, you know, unpacking, like, is there something deeper here, or is this just normal kids stuff? And yeah, I have one that has, you know, what we call invisible special needs, and he was very impacted by his trauma. And there are things that just, you know, you can teach over and over and over and over and over. And, you know, I hope one day we'll learn and mm-hmm. here we go again. So,
yeah, I think getting to the root of any of our issues helps us understand why we're repeating behavior that's damaging and destructive for our own lives and other people's lives. And realizing that, you know, you have a different circumstance than I have, but it's interesting that you feel like you have to unpack that regularly, because you kind of have to realize, like, some of your kiddos have longings that cut deeper than some of your other kids. And so what does it look like to really get into those places? Because if you can find healing for those places, then you might be able to change the destructive pattern, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And we just had a situation this morning where we have a couple that we call frequent flyers of the timeout chair. Yes. And one particular frequent flyer, just right before I came here.
Which, by the way, it's only 9 a.m. So that means a lot happens early in the morning at your house.
Man, they wake up early. They are rearing to go. Sometimes I'm like, I haven't had my coffee yet. Just no words. Give me 2 minutes.
I totally understand.
Oh, goodness. But yeah, it was, yeah, unpacking it. Yeah, we actually had a situation before I even came where both of us are sitting crying on the floor because little one said to me, you know, I think that if you had been there when I was a baby, that I would, you know, have an easier time minding you, or something. I forget the exact words and how it was articulated, but this kid definitely just struggles with trust and definitely has more, you know, seeking to control situations. And so therefore, you know, obedience can sometimes be a struggle. And, you know, apparently while in timeout chair, we were processing that and processing our story. And, you know, you never know when those things are going to come out too. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was a really sweet moment where, you know, he's crying, I tear up, and I'm like, I wish I would have been there. I wish I would have. And, but it was so good because, said, yeah, and it's hard. You know, we say the boo-boos on your heart, you know, make it hard for you to trust. And, you know, but with God's help, we're going to get through this and we're going to keep going. And so
That's a beautiful moment. The power of a timeout in all of our lives, whether we're adults or kids, right?
Yeah.
Just to, like, stop.
Exactly.
And have space and silence to be able to recognize, like, why am I in this place again?
Exactly. I mean, I'll even say, you know, when everything's crazy around my house, I am known to be like, mama needs a timeout.
Is that the chocolate in the closet moment? What do your timeouts look like?
Yeah, I do hide, and I do have chocolate in my closet. But yeah, I'll go to the bathroom and stay in there a few extra minutes. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, it's quiet in here.
Yeah, I bet. Well, hey, scripture lays out the consequences of folly, and I'm going to read a few of these to us, but Ecclesiastes 10:1 says, as dead flies give perfume a bad smell, so little folly outweighs wisdom and honor. Psalm 38:5 says, my wounds fester and are loathsome because of my sinful folly. Proverbs 14:24 says, the wealth of the wise is their crown, but the folly of fools yields folly. Proverbs 19:3 says, a person's own folly leads to their ruin, yet their heart rages against the Lord. Our kids and us know the consequences oftentimes, and yet the consequences can be perfectly laid out, and yet people still choose folly. Why do you think our kids do that? Because I think if we can locate the answer to that question, we might be able to locate why we keep finding our own lives in the same foolish places, right? Because the scriptures are saying, like, folly will ruin wisdom and honor. It will cause wounds. It will take away wealth. It will lead to ruin. I mean, there's all of these sort of promises and wisdom, like, hey, you keep doing the same thing over and over again that's not working for your life, and look at all the negative consequences that are going to come after you. Mm-hmm. And yet we keep being the dog that returns to the vomit.
Yep.
Why don't the consequences motivate us away from the vomit?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, I struggle too sometimes, you know. Yeah. I think that, you know, as much as I'm like, I'm going to handle this situation with love and grace, and, you know, mm-hmm. I fall into it too. And I think just, you know, we're sin. I think that, you know, we fall into it, and it doesn't make it right. But mm-hmm. We do.
It's the human struggle. There's this story, and I've heard it several times. I think it's one of those ones that sort of wanders the internet, and I probably won't give it justice. But it's this story about how Eskimos love capturing the wolf. And the way that they do it is they take a knife, and they, when they kill a wolf, they dip the knife in, it has blood on it, and they freeze it, and they continue to kind of create this almost like bloody lollipop around the knife. And then they set the knife out as a trap, and the wolf smells the blood. And so the wolf's like, that smells good. And it starts licking it. And then it goes crazy because it tastes so good, and it keeps licking it. And next thing you know, it doesn't realize it, but it's eating its own blood because it's got its own blood. And then it's going crazy and so excited about how delicious this tastes. And the next thing you know, the wolf kills itself by its own desire for this blood. And it's kind of this idea that which tastes so good has the power to end us. And one of the things I notice as parents is that we think if we can just sit down and tell our kids, you know, we have seen what kills the wolf, so don't buy into the frozen knife, that they're going to listen and not make that mistake. But for some reason, they don't always learn our lessons, and they have to make their own mistakes. What is God teaching you about trying not to control keeping your kids from learning their own lesson?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we are set up for failure if we think that we can all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's important for us to just know, like, where our role begins and ends. And, you know, our role as parents is a huge one and a really important one. And then there's God's role. And some of those lessons, you know, He created each one of us, and He created our kids, and He knows how we're wired and how we learn and how we don't learn. And, you know, I was probably one of those kids that, you know, would hear a story or a lesson and think, yeah, but I wonder if that's going to be the same for me. You know, maybe I could make it different. And sometimes I had to learn those lessons the hard way.
Right.
And, you know, some of my most painful lessons actually, you know, were the greatest opportunities for growth. And so I think that, you know, man, it's a really fine line between, you know, being there for your kids and wanting to teach them and have them learn and protect them from things. And then sometimes stepping out of the way and letting them fail, letting them learn those lessons that only they can learn on their own. But it's hard.
That's really hard.
It's so hard.
And there's this weird thing, especially I find in Christian culture, where, and I think a lot of parents are like this, Christian or not Christian, where they feel like, I want my kid to learn from my mistakes so they don't have to repeat them and they can make their own mistakes.
Absolutely.
But so often they have to learn from their own mistakes. And no matter how much we pass down our wisdom and our teachings and our stories and we share our lessons, which I think we need to continue to do, but that doesn't assure that they're not going to make the same mistakes. And what I find in Christian culture is I think a lot of Christians think that if they just teach God's word and they just instill God and church and family and morals and values and the things that they believe, that it's automatic insurance that their kid will grab hold of all those things, will not make the same mistakes, will come out looking exactly like the human they wanted them to look like, who loves God and chooses God and lives for God. And then they're almost shocked. Like, I'm meeting all these sort of like parents with high schoolers and college age students and adults, empty nesters, and they're so almost disillusioned. Like, what did I do wrong that my adult child is doing this? What did I do wrong that my adult child wants nothing to do with God? What did I do wrong that, you know, my adult child is struggling with X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting thing, to go to a place of blame where somehow it's our fault because our children have had to make mistakes and they're currently learning from those mistakes, when that's how we grew up. Like, totally. That's how I ended up looking for Jesus. A lot of my pursuit of Jesus was because I found myself sleeping in the vomit. Yeah. And I had to wake up. I mean, kind of like Luke 15, where parable of the lost son, and, you know, he rebels against his father and he goes away and he's literally eating pig slop. And the Bible says he comes to his senses and he kind of wakes up and realizes, I'd be better off as a servant for my father than here in the pig slop. Like, why do we think that the son doesn't have to go off and end up eating pig slop to realize that he wants to be back with the father? Like, why do Christians think, no, I'm going to do it all the right way, and there's this formula, and if I live out this formula, then my kids don't have to make mistakes. And then when they do, we're just completely floored by that.
I know. It is funny because, I mean, that story, right? The father let him go do that. And I think that that's one of my favorite stories because, you know, the father could have said no, but he chose to let his son go and do that. And I mean, that had to have been hard. I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. based on how the story ended, he loved his son very, very much and was so excited when he returned. And yeah, that story really speaks to me as a parent. Mm-hmm. Because the focus is always on, you know, the prodigal son going off. But when you look at it from a parenting lens, the father allowed it.
Right.
And,
oh, I'm sure it was painful, but the son rebelled against the father. And there's this sense in the parable where the father waits.
Right.
He's waiting on a hill when the son, you know, rises up from that pig slop and turns around. The father was waiting there and says, while he was still a long way off, while the son was still a long way off, right? The father went running to the son. Like,
yeah.
There is this painful waiting process in parenting. How much of that waiting and that process is happening even while the kids are still in the house?
Totally. Totally. And I love that they're still in the house, that some of those things can be happening while they're under our roofs. Mm. And, you know, we can kind of provide that safety net. And that's my hope, you know, is that some of those lessons can be worked through and learned before they're out on their own. But yeah, I know that, you know, my natural tendency coming back to that story would be just to be like, okay, fine, you know, but you're on your own. But Yeah, I'm more shocked by the fact that the father actually gave the inheritance and said, you know, here you go, and even set him up a little bit.
Right, because we'd be like, good luck.
Right. Exactly.
Call me when you can realize how amazing I am.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
Huh. What's your opinion on the effectiveness of lectures, and what are you finding? Are you finding that anything works better?
Yeah, well, I've learned through making the mistake more than once that it's not effective. And in fact, one of my kiddos has actually openly admitted and so did we, right? When you hear a lecture, it's like that Charlie Brown teacher, wah, 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 wah. And you're just waiting for it to be over and you're not really listening. But I do find that that kiddo did admit that, you know, more effective was just kind of these suggestions of how it might go and, you know, what the best route would be and just making the suggestion. And, you know, she was saying that, you know, a lot of times it's way down the road after the fact that she's realized, like, oh, maybe mom did know what she was talking about. Maybe that was the right way. But yeah, the lectures definitely, they just tune it out and totally tune it out. And I think that probably what's been more effective is just kind of like walking back through it and just kind of helping facilitate, you know, what happened and letting them use their brain, not me, you know, telling them, but asking more open-ended questions, like, you know, so tell me what happened. And then pulling those little nuggets of wisdom out. When you got to this point, you know, how could you have done it differently? You know, what would have made more sense? But because, I mean, ultimately, we can't be there for every single thing in their life and telling them, you need to do this, you shouldn't do that, you know, but helping them discover, you know, where was the turning point and what went wrong and what should I do next time? And, you know, I'm not saying it always works the next time, but having that conversation over and over of what you should do versus what you shouldn't, because I think focusing on what you shouldn't do and what you did wrong isn't really the goal. We need to be working toward what we should be doing, right?
Yeah. I've been trying to work on that a lot more instead of me jumping immediately to like telling my kids, this is what you should have done. I'm trying to reframe it and say, what do you think would have been some alternative choices that you could have made? Or tell me three things you could have done besides what you did do. Exactly. Once they've recognized that what they did didn't work, it's like, Right. Then you're getting their brain to start thinking of alternative solutions when they're faced with choices, right?
Yeah.
But that's a shift that you have to make in your own head as a parent. And it's a tough one.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
This proverb uses the word repeat. And there's something about the repeat as a parent that makes me crazy. Like I feel like my head is going to explode and I lose my cool when I feel like we've had this conversation so many, like how many times do I have to say the same thing over and over again? It makes me feel like mentally insane or something. And I guess I'm just wondering how much of repeat should we assume as a part of parenting instead of like losing our mind? Like how much of it should we just remind ourselves as like, hey, that's part of the deal here.
Yeah. And I don't know the answer. And I think for every kid, it's going to be different of like the how much. I think for some, they learn faster, crash and burn, and not going back to that one. Let's move on with life. And other ones, it's like, here we go again. Woo. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. But definitely that there is going to be some repeat. And here we are again and again and again. And, you know, it's funny because I know for me, I can totally relate Jesus, coffee, and sarcasm are what keep me going, and especially in these moments where I'm about to lose it. And it's so funny because so many times people see me in a moment where, you know, we're like in the thick of it, and, you know, I receive these nice compliments like, oh, you know, you're just handling this so well. And I'm thinking, you can't hear what I'm saying in my head. So, I mean, it's, yeah, definitely. There are those times I'm like, what are we doing?
Oh, I know. I lost my mind the other day in Target. So if any of you are listening and you saw me and you judge me, here's what was happening. We were in Target as a family, and my teenage son and my husband were arguing over something, and the volume got cranked up and the intensity, and they wouldn't stop, and they were both just on and on and on. And then because they couldn't resolve the scenario in the middle of Target, they came to find me, and here I am with my red cart and I'm getting the things I need, and they all of a sudden want me to be their referee. And so, you know, well, he said this and then I'm like, oh my gosh, like, and I literally took my cart and I'm like running from them with my cart. I go, don't be by me. I don't want to deal with you guys. Like, I don't want to be a part of this. This is embarrassing. Deal with yourself. Move away from me. And they kept following me. I'm not your referee. And I'm like, I think anyone who saw us were like, this family is insane. But it's the repeat. It's the constant, like, how many times do we have to talk about this issue? How many times do we have to revisit this? And it really does feel like maybe if we just own that as part of being a parent. Because I think in a sense, we have a God who's sort of owned that. It's not that he's saying, I want you to keep making these mistakes, but he knows it's a part of his role as a father to his kids. And I feel like in any job you have, whether it's, you know, I don't know, being a waiter or being a lawyer or being a pastor, once you accept the hard parts of your job, they don't kind of frazzle you as much because you just go, this kind of comes along with the territory. And I'm trying to remind myself, you know, oh, this kid's frontal lobe isn't fully developed. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I'm trying to do when I want to blow my top, you know?
Yeah.
Sort of remind yourself, like, this comes with the role. Do you have any kind of mantras or sort of encouraging statements you make to yourself when you want to lose your mind on your kids?
My most frequent prayer is...
You know, like, Lord, help me. High pitched. He can hear it better.
I think so. But, you know, just little things. Eyes up. And I just try to look over the top of it and just take a deep breath and just remind myself that, you know, he's doing the same thing with me. And he's not shaming me. Like, oh, here we go again, Jen. You know, I think, you know, he is saying, here we go again, but it's more of a, okay, here we go again. Mm-hmm. Now I'm here and here's what we're going to do and here's how this is going to go. And do you trust me? And I think that, you know, so much of what we walk through with our kids, if we really stop and pause and think, there are so many parallels to our relationship with God mm-hmm. and how he parents us and, you know, he's not like, you didn't learn this, you know, grace and truth, you know, so much love, so much grace. And then, okay.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought up the shame piece because I think so often it's easy for us as parents when our kids are making repeated mistakes to make them feel terrible because we think if we can shame them, that somehow that's going to alter their behavior. And I think that's misguided. And I can even find myself doing that where you kind of just want to rub and don't you see, you know, like if you can just kind of lay out how bad it is, then they won't totally. Do it again. But that's such an unhealthy way of dealing with someone's mistakes and not how the Lord deals with us.
No, it's so true. And I think, you know, we're tempted because, you know, when we've tried it the nice way, sometimes I'll tell the kids, and I mean, it's terrible, but I'm like, you are making me a mean mom. I want to be the nice mom, but you know, you keep doing this and it's making me a mean mom. And ultimately that's not a true statement. I have a choice to be the mean mom or the nice mom and you know, their behaviors, you know, I have a choice to let that impact me or not, but I am human raising humans. And so sometimes I do make that mistake and I am not the sweet, gracious, grace-filled mom and I get a little snappy. So,
yeah, but that's so true that we have to take responsibility for our behavior, our reactions, our emotions, and not blame our children for those.
Totally. And I think there's a difference, you know, we talk a lot in our family about there's a huge difference between reacting and responding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes I'll say, Mama needs a timeout. And part of that is because I need a second to just collect my thoughts and breathe. One of my favorite scriptures, you know, when in anger, do not sin. And in Ephesians. And I just, you know, like, okay, you know, it's natural to be mad. It's mm-hmm. natural to get your buttons pushed and be like, whoa, we're doing this again. But just taking that second to breathe and, you know, take it to the Lord, seek mm-hmm. wisdom. And, you know, how are we handling this? You know, what are we doing? And then, and properly respond, composed versus yeah. flying off the handle.
Yeah. What are some of your tools in your tool belt that, I don't know if you had the Jen Shah, like these are, you know, my top few tools in my tool belt of things that you pull out when you're trying to get your kids to see the folly and making the same mistakes again and again?
You know, I think it's for me and them, but, and again, you know, as I'm saying this, it's putting on the pedestal of, you know, I'm a wise person. Well, I have learned a lot of things because I've made a lot of mistakes.
And you have eight children.
Right?
So I call you a superwoman.
Yeah. But, you know, there have been times that I've done it right and there have been times I've done it wrong. And I find that, you know, especially when I'm the most frazzled, pursuing the heart, I think that, you know, not just tabling whatever the mistake was and just pursuing the heart and letting them know that, you know, the reason why this is even an issue is because I love them and because I want what's best for them. And so, you know, just starting with things, speaking truth to them and value statements, I just think it puts me in such a better posture of then confronting whatever the issue is. But, you know, saying things like, you're better than this, you're a good kid, you have a good heart, things that are true. And you made this mistake, we need to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But just really, you know, setting the stage of the why, you know, exactly the opposite of shame. You're loved and ultimately we want what's best for you. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, foundationally, is so helpful to just, start there. And, you know, Jesus modeled that. He always, you know, met with someone, connected with them, then spoke truth. It's just how he rolled. Mm-hmm. You know? And then I think, you know, finding positives in humor, in the middle of something when a child is, I have some strong-willed kids. And, you know, it's just finding things that are funny in there. And, you know, like, well, I got to hand it to you. You know, you stayed committed to that choice.
That's good, Jen.
You know, I admire your commitment. You know.
Or, you know, let's try to channel
right
that persistence.
Or, you know, I have to say your problem solving skills were amazing. You know, I took away the video game, so you went and found the tablet. You found the tablet and took that away, so you went and found the next thing. You know, I mean, there are things to find.
Right, you're amazing. So resourceful
in that, right? So, I mean, even in the midst of something where it is crazy making and they're yeah. being totally divided, but just, right. you know, finding those positives and finding the humor, because ultimately it's funny, you know, it really, there's always.
Most of the time it is.
Okay, sometimes it's totally not funny at all, but sometimes it's not. But in most things, you know, there's something that's like, oh my goodness. I mean, even just laughing about the foolishness of it all, it's like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. You know, you thought that was going to work out. So, laughing definitely helps me stay calm.
Right. It's so funny because you can have an experience in the moment where you're like, you have got to be kidding. But it doesn't take long for kind of the everyday stuff where, you know, a few days, week later, you're just dying laughing. I mean, I just had that where my son has this group of boys that come over almost every weekend and stay the night, and they stay up, you know, they're in high school. They stay up to all hours of the night and they go play basketball or go swim or, you know, they play video games. They go in the hot tub and I go to bed way before them, but they've only always been trustworthy, really. In the larger sense of what that means.
Yeah.
I mean, they leave pizza boxes out and throw their cans on the floor. That kind of stuff.
Sure.
But I think a couple months ago, midwinter, I went to bed at probably midnight or something, and I couldn't sleep all night. I wasn't sleeping well, and I kind of realized why in the morning. I wake up, and there's mud everywhere in the downstairs of my house. I mean, everywhere. The dogs had been going in winter weather in and out because the boys left the door. My son did not close the hot tub door, did not close the back door. So the dogs are out barking all night at the squirrels, the bunnies, the deer, the neighbors, every car, and then bringing mud and tracking it in all over the place. And some sort of wildlife came into my house and ate a chunk of the carpet. And there's garbage everywhere because the dogs got in the garbage. And I was so irate because I was like, how many times do I have to tell you, Aiden, to close the door?
Right.
And they came in at like 1 or 2 in the morning and left the back door open. And I'm thinking, this kid's going to have his driver's license. Like, how hard is it just close the door? So I'm ticked because I want to be able to trust him so that, you know, I can trust him with other things. And I think he would laugh at this. And I'm laughing at this because weeks later, I'm like, I think there was like a raccoon that ate my living room carpet and there was garbage everywhere.
It's possible.
You know, and I can laugh now, but in the moment, it's hard to laugh.
Yeah, I'm only laughing because it's your house, not mine.
when your kids do use wisdom, how do you celebrate it?
Oh my goodness. You know, I probably honestly need to do more of it. I know that, you know, praising them for it, you know, for the little kids, I use my, thank you, you know, good choice. You made a good choice. Mommy loves it when you make a good choice. But, you know, obviously don't talk to your teenagers in that condescending.
Well, if you do, they'll hang out at their friends' houses more
usually
often.
With the teenagers, I use my, you know, mommy voice like that. For really the opposite. It's
more. That's the sarcasm.
It's piece. More to drive a point home that I weren't doing that. But yeah, you know, honestly, I think for me, that's probably a growth point. I know that sadly, I probably expect more wisdom than I praise them for. And, you know, like, well, you're supposed to do it right. Mm-hmm. And
I think we can all work on that for sure. Yeah. How are you seeing the power and presence of God showing up right smack dab in the middle of your kids' mistakes?
Oh, wow. I think grace and truth for all of us. Just, you know, he has this way of showing things that we maybe didn't see. And, you know, it has a way of sifting up your own stuff. Your kids' mistakes sometimes trigger, you know, things in your own life. And, you know, God definitely has used the kids' mistakes to refine me and show me things that I need to work on. And, you know, them too, obviously, when we allow him to journey well, when we journey well with him and allow him to lead us through those things. You know, definitely traits like strength and perseverance, determination, or being developed in the middle of the struggle. And so I think that, you know, those are good things. I think that, you know, I mentioned that some of the hardest times in my life have created some of the things that I wouldn't trade for the world. You know, you wouldn't choose bad choices or bad circumstances or anything like that. But some of the different traits that get developed along the way with God's help are you know, lifelong. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, God has that way of, you know, turning, you know, the beauty from the ashes, and he uses all those things. And if we let him, and if we're looking for him. So I think that's the key, though, is to be looking for those things, mm-hmm. not, you know, trying to take control of it, or, you know, everything be, this is all terrible, you know, because in the moment, it seems all terrible. Mm-hmm. But God always has a way of taking those things and doing what only he can do.
Yeah. I sometimes feel like I respond to my kids' mistakes with my I told you so's. And I'm trying to move from that place into a place of, wow, that's really hard. How do you feel? What could you do differently, like we talked about? But also a place of like sitting in it with my kid, mm-hmm. and recognizing like I make mistakes too, and like getting to a place where I can be vulnerable with my kids and sit in their mistakes and admit mine, and have us both need God together, that we both are kind of broken and sad by the mistakes that we have made.
Absolutely.
Have you had moments like that with your kids? And can you think of one?
Definitely. I mean, I don't remember exactly like what the scenario was, but I had told, you know, one of my sons to do something, and, you know, he misunderstood and things went wonky and was exactly the opposite of what I was hoping was going to end up happening.
Right.
And, you know, I was tired. I was stressed, you know, all the excuses, and, you know, I kind of snapped at him. And this is like my sweetest little, most compliant little boy ever, who's never trying to disobey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the look on his face was like, woo. And, you know, I apologized. And I said, you know, I'm really sorry. You know, I know you weren't trying to, you know, misbehave, disobey. And he was so sweet and so full of grace. And that's the interesting thing, is that our kids sometimes give us so much grace. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always learning from them. And he said to me, it's like, it's okay, Mom, you know, you have a lot going on. And I just felt really convicted in that moment. And I said, you know what, sweetie, thank you. Thank you for your grace. I said, but it's never okay for me to treat you like that. You know, yes, there's reasons. I'm, you know, I'm stressed and feeling snappy, but, mm-hmm. you know, no matter what you did, you made a mistake, and, you know, it's not okay for me to, you know, snap at you. It's not. You know, mm-hmm. So thank you for your grace. But it was just a really good, you know, vulnerable moment for, you know, me to admit, like, you know, I'm human too. And yeah. I make mistakes. And, you know, my little kids, I'll say that to them. And, you know, sometimes when they make a mistake, they'll look at me and they'll go, even mommies make mistakes, right? Like, yes, mm-hmm. even mommies make mistakes. And I think that, you know, just pursuing God together, you know, and showing them what that looks like. I know a lot of times as Christians, we think, you know, we need to be Christ-like. And that's really great, but we are also human. So really, we need to be Christ followers, which is, there's a big difference, mm-hmm. you know. We obviously want to emulate Christ as best we can, but we will fail constantly. Mm-hmm. And so what do we do then? Because, you know, Jesus is the only one who didn't sin. And so I think that, you know, that's something we can all learn together, is, you know, obviously try not to, but when you mess up and you blow it, mm-hmm. what do we do next? So
there is this weird power dynamic at play with parents and kids that I don't know that we talk about much, or I haven't been in conversations about it, but I'm just thinking as you're talking that my son is teaching me a lot all the time. And, you know, recently he's like, why are our conversations always centered around what I'm doing wrong and not about what you've done wrong? Right? Like, and that sounds terrible to admit, but I think that's present in most, you know, child-parent relationships, where it's like, I'm going to tell you how you blew it, but then there's not going to be a conversation about how the parent, you know, got angry or said something or name called or, you know, blew the consequences out of proportion and made, you know, a mountain out of a molehill or whatever. Like, there's not a lot of conversation because we're the one directing the conversation. And it's become interesting to me that I need to actually engage him in, you know, we can have a conversation about what he's doing, but I need to also confess my wrongs, and we both need to grab each other's hand and go to the one that we need to make us more whole and more like Jesus and more loving. And there's something about the power of us both recognizing our own wrongs to each other, saying sorry, saying I forgive you, because it kind of, the power of those words, I'm sorry and I forgive you, remove the miles between us that were caused by whatever we both did wrong. But we have to sort of remove that power play.
Definitely.
That's going on.
Definitely. I think, you know, that restoration only takes place when there's that vulnerability, because, you know, whether it's spoken or not, you know, there's an awareness of wrongs. And I think that our kids appreciate when we actually voice that we're aware of our mistakes too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it, you know, and flipping it the other way, you know, there's nothing more crazy making than when your child won't admit that they made a mistake. You know, I find sometimes I'm like, you know what, if you can just own this, let's, like, that's really all I need.
Yeah, we didn't need to do this for 30 minutes.
Right?
Just own it.
I just need you to own it. That's it. Just admit, just own it. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, I did it. I blew it. And stop deflecting, making excuses, you know.
But imagine how they feel then when their parent never owns their stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that, you know, that's exactly where, you know, we need to grow, is realizing, okay, it makes us crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it's making them crazy too.
Yeah.
And as far as like honoring and, you know, respecting your parent, well, if, you know, your parent's not willing to admit their mistakes, that makes it really hard.
Right.
So there's kind of this elephant in the room of like, okay.
Right. I always have to confess my wrongs and you never do, which is really unhealthy. You know, I love Jesus in the New Testament, right? He says, let the little children come to me. And there was kind of his disciples. Some of them were haters, like, no, like, we don't have time for this. And Jesus said, let the little children come to me. Or he calls us to have faith like a child. And I think it's interesting that if we come near to children, we'll in a sense come near to Jesus, because Jesus is with the kids. And I, since becoming a parent, so I've been a parent for almost 17 years, and I have learned so much about God from my kids. So I actually, there's a category on my blog that's schooled by my kids, because I'm always learning from them. And I love that you and I, we have just class after class where we're downloading wisdom from our children. When you collide with Jesus in the New Testament and you see him show up in the middle of people's lives who keep making the same mistakes again and again, what do you love about how he handles falling on repeat?
I just love the way he blends together both grace and truth. You know, I feel like sometimes we struggle with one or the other,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, he just doesn't. He has this amazing way of just meeting people in the middle of their mess, loving on them, sitting with them, connecting with them, and there's no shame, but yet then he says, you know, go and sin no more. You know, I think of the woman at the well, or, you know, the woman caught in adultery. You know, he sticks up for her, but then he calls her higher. And it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. And I think, you know, as you're talking, it's an invitation for us as parents, but I also think it's an invitation for us as his kids to remember that he says, come to me, and he'll meet us with grace, but also truth, wisdom, that will invite us into our best life, which is the kind of parent we want and we're lucky to have, you know?
Absolutely.
When you say goodbye to your last kiddo, what year will that be where you become, you actually become an empty nester?
Oh my goodness.
Unless you adopt or have more children.
Right. Yeah. And we don't go there. People ask all the time, are you planning on having any more children? And I say, I'm not answering that question.
Oh, I didn't ask.
So we're not answering because every time I, in my life, say no to something, it happens. So as long as I just don't answer, we can maybe just stay in a holding pattern for a little bit. But, you know, God knows what he's doing. So I just don't say. You know, my answer is yes, Lord. And here we are. So I think it is 2033.
2033. That is in 14 years.
Yes.
And you've been a parent already for how many years?
For 21.
So that's, I'm doing the math real quick, 35 years of parenting children in the house. Not
in
you
the
were
house.
Always a parent, but that's 35 years of parenting children in the house.
Yes.
What wisdom do you hope they take with them on the journey of life when they're all out the door and you say goodbye to your last one?
You know, that they can always come home. You know, I want them, there's this quote about giving your children both roots and wings. And to me, that's just such a beautiful picture of what I want for my kids. You know, I want them to fly. I want them to be built up with all the tools and go live their best life, go adventure, go pursue their dreams. But I always want them to know that they can always come home and, you know, that it's okay to fail. It's okay to have struggles and that, you know, we want them to go, but, you know, we also want them to come home. And so
that's so beautiful. I feel emotional when you're saying that because I feel like that's what God would say to each one of us. You can always come home.
Yep.
Thank you for hanging out with me on the podcast.
You betcha.
I feel like we got so much wisdom and had so much fun. We'll have to do it again. you guys, thank you so much for joining us. And I hope that if you're parents, this was encouraging to you as you raise kids who are beautiful human beings who will go out and help change this world and make it a better place. And I also hope for those of you who maybe haven't felt like you could come home, that you would know that you can always come home to God. May you be encouraged this week. And if you want to check out Collide, check out our blog, check out resources we have, our upcoming events, you can go to wecollide.net. And we're also on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, all the things. And keep colliding, guys. We'll catch you next week.